From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to Washington Watch. Coming up, House Democrats in a quandary over what to do with the anti-Semitic remarks of Minnesota Congresswoman Ilhan Omar are right now pushing a watered-down resolution denouncing not the words of Congresswoman Omar, but anonymous words of hate. Georgia Congressman Barry Loudermilk weighs in on that topic, as well as Speaker Nancy Pelosi's top legislative priority, H.R. 1, the For the People Act, or as opponents are calling it, the Incumbent Protection Act. Also, the president announced that while it will be smaller in number, the U.S. will maintain a military presence in northeast Syria, along with a coalition of other nations. Will this be enough to keep Turkey, Russia, Iran, and others at bay? Our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin is here with the answer. And with Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report due to be released, and reports suggesting there is no evidence of collusion with Russia, what do the American people, what do they want to see happen? More investigations? More hearings? Well, Rasmussen Reports actually asked voters that question. Fran Coombs is here with their findings. In fact, we'll give you a chance a little bit later to weigh in on that subject. You'll recall Colorado banker Jack Phillips, owner of Masterpiece Cakes. He's the one that won the Supreme Court case last year, saying the state could not force him to make a cake for a same-sex wedding. Well, the state Civil Rights Commission, they went after him again for not baking a cake for a gender transition celebration. Jack fought back, and now the commission is waving a white flag. What does this mean for religious freedom in the U.S.? FRC's Travis Weber is here to answer that question and also to weigh in on the implication of the troops staying in Syria, the implications that will have on religious freedom in the Middle East. All that's to come on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, if you've not yet joined the effort to end birthday abortions, you can do so by going to TonyPerkins.com and sending Nancy Pelosi a message. Find out how. Go to TonyPerkins.com. All right, a little bit later, I'm going to give you the results of yesterday's survey that we did regarding the Barna study of spiritually vibrant families. You might find the results interesting. We'll go to that later. But first, H.R. 1, an act for what they call For the People, but more of an Incumbent Protection Act, is a high priority for the new Democratic majority. However, they keep getting, tripped up by their own words. Congressman Ilhan Omar making more anti-Semitic remarks, the Democratic leadership having to deal with that. In fact, right now, as we speak, a resolution on the House floor. Joining us now is Republican Congressman Barry Loudermilk of Georgia. He represents the 11th Congressional District. He serves on the House Administration Committee that actually oversaw this bill, H.R. 1. But first, we're going to get him to weigh in on this almost anonymous resolution denouncing hate that the House is voting on right now. Barry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, it's good to be with you.
Thanks. I know it's a very busy day for you, so thanks for taking time to step off the floor. Your thoughts on what the Democratic leadership is now pushing forward, which falls far short of rebuking Congresswoman Omar for her anti-Semitic remarks.
Tony, this is passing the buck. It's not wanting to look at the real issue here. Look, what have we continually heard out of the Democrats? Racism. The Republicans are racist. They throw out the term Nazi at us. And this is very offensive to a lot of us. My dad fought in World War II against Nazism. And they diminish the meaning of these words. When you call somebody a racist without any justification, it actually diminishes that term for those who really have faced and still across the world face racism. So they have always used this as a political weapon. Now, when one of their own is actually making racist remarks, anti-Semitic remarks, instead of dealing with it, instead of censoring her, removing her from Foreign Affairs Committee, this is their answer to do a generic resolution saying hate is a bad thing. I mean, how many times have we've expressed that as a Congress or as elected members that anti-Semitism is a bad thing? Hate in always is a bad thing. Jesus came here to say, love your enemies. That's the way we deal with things. But what they're doing now is, instead of addressing the true issue, which is there is someone that is bigoted within the Democratic caucus, they want to do a general resolution, just have everybody vote on this so everybody feels good, instead of actually dealing with their problem.
Well, Congressman Loudermilk, my prediction is, given that this is not the first time she's made these statements, in fact, it was just a month ago she made statements, and she's only been there 3 months, I predict that we're going to be back at this same point more, especially if the Democratic leadership refuses to directly deal with it.
I think you're right. I mean, there's nothing holding back the radical progressives that are really running the Democratic caucus right now. I mean, that's Nancy Pelosi, in my opinion, and by most evidence, is not running the show over there. It's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative Omar Tlaib. Those are the ones who are really actually pushing the agenda. If you look at what's happened in this Congress, it has been an extremely radical agenda going forward. And so unless they're willing to step up and rein in these radical views, we're just going to continue to see more and more of this.
Yeah, and I think it's also very instructive when you look at the, I think we're now up above a dozen Democratic presidential hopefuls, that none of them are saying anything about these leftist policies, ideals, statements of racism that are being pushed forward.
But what you do hear, this is what's amazing to me. I keep hearing these news reports about the actor who staged a hate crime against himself.
Right.
Swearing that, you know, or alleging that people wearing MAGA hats made racial slurs and attacked him, and it turns out that this was fabricated. Of course, the left-leaning media went crazy over it for several days, and then when this came out, they just went relatively silent. I read a news report the other day where an 81-year-old man, I think it was 81-year-old man, was wearing a Make America Great Again hat and was attacked by a young person and beaten. But no one's reporting that. When are we going to operate on a level playing field is my question. Is hate hate, or is hate only worth covering when it makes a Republican or a conservative look bad? And this is the imbalance that we're dealing with in America today.
Well, I think you answered your own question. And you're going to be waiting a long time, my friend, to see the media or the Democratic presidential hopefuls address that issue. Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Congressman Barry Loudermilk of Georgia, my guest. Barry, I want to play this clip. Yesterday, a debate was going on regarding H.R. 1. One of your colleagues, Scott Perry from Pennsylvania, made this comment on the House floor.
Mr. Speaker, the For the People Act, that's what it's called. But I wonder which people. Is it the people here or the people out there? The people that are opposed to the things you believe in are going to find out you sent your $5 in. Essentially, it's going to empower the Federal Elections Commission to carry out the actions of Lois Lerner and the IRS during the last administration in an attempt to silence opposition to the politicians in the swamp in this place, regardless of which side you're on. I urge a no vote for this bill, Mr. Speaker.
Now, Barry, you said that this is a bill. This bill is nothing less than a federal takeover of our elections. It's being pushed through the House. It would disenfranchise voters, cost billions, and strip state legislatures who have set standards to ensure free, fair elections. You're on the committee that oversees this. Only three Republicans on the committee. I would imagine you know this thing inside and out.
Well, we're trying to. Here's the problem, Tony, is this thing has been rushed through. You would think a bill of this magnitude, it started off at 571 pages. We get a copy of it literally 24 hours, 48 at the most, before the only committee hearing that we had on this bill. Well, we had a hearing earlier in the week, which was a panel saying why we needed to federalize the election system. Very weak arguments to start with. But then we get the actual bill about 24 hours before we actually have the markup. So we're having to go through this entire bill. We come up with 40 amendments to try to basically to expose the contradictions in it and the fallacies in it and how bad it is. We had a five-hour markup. That is the only process that has happened with this massive bill. So no one's had time to read this thing thoroughly. We've dug into it as much as we can. I can tell you this. We know more about the bill than the Democrats who were bringing it through committee did. That was evident when we started bringing up amendments to the bill. There were some absolute crazy things, such as requiring advance voting of 15 days at polling places across America. Well, that sounds great. We do that in Georgia. The Georgia legislature passed that years ago. Here's the problem. I worked in Alaska when I was a teenager, worked construction. I worked in a remote village that had a population of 15 people. On election day, the entire village votes by noon. So now you're going to make Alaska spend the money it would cost to keep a polling place open for 15 days for a city that has 15 people. It makes no sense whatsoever. They didn't even realize that was in their own bill. So part of the problem and the reason that we've had 60-some-odd amendments on the bill that we're still hearing is because we're bringing up all these fallacies they're having. They're trying to make it a little more palatable, and they're not going to be able to get there because this whole thing's unconstitutional. It totally strips the states of what the Constitution gives them the power to actually set election law. This would totally strip that away and federalize all elections. And basically, if this thing passed, you would just see this swamp grow bigger, deeper, and stinkier.
When I was talking with Mike Johnson about this yesterday, and what it looks like to me, I mean, you've got a brand new subsidy for campaigns where federal money is going to go into campaigns to fund attack ads, bumper stickers for candidates that you don't even support. I mean, there's just so much that does. Broadens the definition of lobbyist, allows for organizations that are not actually involved directly in campaigns to have to release names of their donors so they can be harassed by the left. I mean, this sounds exactly what California has been doing with their ballot harvesting and everything that has made that state go so far to the left. It looks like Nancy Pelosi wants to impose that on the entire nation.
That's exactly right. And here's the interesting thing. They want to do the ballot harvesting nationwide. And right now, North Carolina is having to go back and redo an election because it appears that the Republican candidate, the ballot harvesting, which is illegal in North Carolina, it's legal in California. If you look at the elections the Republicans lost in California, on the night of the election, we won those.
Right.
We were ahead. Two, three weeks later, they've brought in more votes because ballot harvesting does not create an election day. It creates an election season. So if on election day you don't have enough votes for the election to go the way that your party wanted, you can go out and get more people to cast more ballots, absentee ballots, and then bring them in. They'll still count them. That's what happened in California. This would be the law nationwide.
When do you anticipate a vote taking place?
It is planned to take place tomorrow, and hopefully the Senate's going to back us up, and they're never going to let this happen light of day in the Senate.
All right. Congressman Barry Loudermilk, out of time. I want to thank you for joining us today.
All right. Thank you, Tony.
Keep up the good work. Hey, folks, you still got time to weigh in with your member of Congress, the Capitol switchboard number 202-224-3121. That's 202-224-3121. But you know what? It'd be so much easier if you had the Stand Firm app. That's right. You can download the Stand Firm app at the App Store or go to TonyPerkins.com. That makes it real easy. All right, coming up next, General Boykin joins us to talk about Syria and the continued military presence there. Don't go away.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. As promised, I will give you the results from yesterday's poll question. We did a question based upon the Barna study of spiritually vibrant families. And here was the question. First off, I want to thank all those that called in and participated. But here was the question. Based upon the Barna study of spiritually vibrant families, would you say your family is spiritually vibrant? Well, here are the results. 40.48%, almost 40.5% said yes. 9.5% said no, and 48 almost tied. 48.5 said working on it. So keep working on it. You'll get there. It's we're all a work in progress. All right, I'm going to have another one a little bit later today, but first, President announcing that the United States military will maintain a presence in northeast Syria. This comes after the president initially said he would be removing all of the military troops, about 2,000 troops that are there. A force of 200 to 400 will remain, along with a coalition of other countries, France, Great Britain. This comes, it's a relief to many, especially in the northeast region, where this coalition government of Kurds, Christians, Muslims, Yazidis, a democratic government in which religious freedom is a part of their charter. Joining me now to talk about whether or not this will be enough and what it means for the Middle East is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony.
I know you were out early after the president's announcement that the U.S. troops would be withdrawn, saying that we need to maintain a presence. It appears the president was listening to those that were concerned about the withdrawal of military presence there in Syria.
Well, I think he was, and to his credit, I think he's not totally reversed that decision, but I think he's done a very wise thing, and that is agreeing to keep some troops there, but calling on our European allies to pick up the larger part of the burden. I think this is a great outcome, and I think the president has done very, very well in defeating ISIS in that part of the world. But he started his announcement by saying ISIS has been destroyed, and that is far from being the case, because they are still a threat, although they have been decimated. They're still there. And they can grow quite rapidly. So I think the president has made another good decision now on top of what I think was originally not a good decision.
Now, the Syrian Democratic Forces continue to fight ISIS, and, you know, the Kurds, I mean, they're really on the front lines of fighting ISIS, and you're right, they're still there, they have a presence, but they're being driven out.
Yeah, that's right, and it wasn't but what, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago that you and I sat with some people from, you know, from that area, people that are, you know what's going on there. And I think that it is very clear that the Kurds, as well as the Christians and the Yazidis, will all be targeted if a void is created there by the withdrawal of U.S. forces or all forces there. They just cannot stand up to either the Turkish military or the full force of the Syrian military.
So will this be enough to keep the Russians, the Turks, or even, you know, obviously the Iranians have an interest there. Will this be enough of a presence to keep them at bay?
Well, only time will tell, but I think so. I think the answer to that is yes, and that is because any conflict with U.S. and coalition forces on the ground in that area would be more of a political decision than a military decision. So if the Russians or the Turks were willing to go in there knowing that they're going to wind up endangering and probably killing Americans along with French and Brits, that would be a huge political decision for them. So I think the mere fact that we'll have 200 to 400 people there, and then there will be a larger group from the coalition forces of the of our European allies, I think it would make it very difficult for any of those key players in there like Russia and Iran to make a decision to go into that area there.
When you look at, and as you mentioned, we've sat down, we spoke with some of the elected representatives from northeast Syria. It's about a third of the country, the area they control. It's actually a very prosperous area. They've got the oil, they've got resources there, so they've got a financial footing. But yeah, it's bigger than that when you look at the fact that this is a representative form of government, a democracy that is really not seen in that region of the world outside of Israel. How significant might that be if this serves to be enough of a military presence to allow that democracy to take root? What impact may it have on the Middle East?
Well, first of all, show me another area, another country in the Middle East where Muslims and Christians are able to live together, share a government, and worship freely according to their own faith. Show me another place other than Israel. So what you're actually seeing there is probably the second place in all of the Middle East where that can occur, and that's what they stressed to us when you and I sat down with them. But here's the other thing that we need to remember, is that the majority of those Christians up there, and you remember we asked them this, the majority of those Christians up there in that northeast Syria are actually former Muslims. They converted to Christianity, and they had to flee the villages and the areas that they were actually living in when they converted, because they are immediately considered apostates. And the penalty for apostasy in Islam is death. So they have congregated up there. They're thriving up there in that area. And as you said, 90% of the revenue in that country is generated right there in that northeast Syria area. They're prospering. They're living peacefully. And all they want is to be able to continue what they're doing without interference by the Russians or the Iranians or the Turks.
Yeah, it's quite amazing to see this happen. And I think it's very important, the point you made, that these are former Muslims that converted to Christianity. You don't see that anywhere else in the Middle East, again, outside of Israel, because they become either targeted, in some cases by the government, in other cases not protected by the government. So this is very, very unique and quite important, I believe, for the case of religious liberty. General, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, General Jerry Boykin. In fact, we're going to talk more about this a little bit later with Travis Weber about the implications for international religious freedom. But coming up next, should the Democrats continue investigating the president if Robert Mueller's report shows no collusion? We'll talk about it next. Don't go away.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. All right, Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report on the Trump campaign collusion with Russia, that is due out anytime. And there is there's strong rumors that there's not going to be any evidence of collusion. Well, what do the American people want to see next? Do they want the Democratic Congress to do more investigations, more hearings? Well, we don't have to wonder. Rasmussen Reports actually asked voters that question. And to tell us what they had to say is with us. Fran Coombs is back with Rasmussen Reports. Fran, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, any surprises here? Give our listeners, don't keep them in suspense. What did voters say?
Well, we found that only 29% of all likely U.S. voters think that congressional Democrats should do their own investigation if Mueller comes up with nothing on collusion.
So 29% say, only 29% say they have moved forward. So 64% say that Democrats in Congress should move on to other issues instead. That's in this day and age of politically divided issues, that seems to be pretty strong.
Yeah, well, I was perhaps the figure that fascinated me most in this survey was that only 50% of Democrats thought that their own guys in Congress should continue to investigate the president if Mueller's team finds no evidence of collusion. And to me, that's pretty remarkable because on most issues related to Trump, you find numbers usually in the 70s against him on virtually everything. And so for only 50% of Democrats to say, yes, let's do our own probe, even if Mueller comes up empty, is to me very interesting.
So is there a downside? It doesn't sound like the Democrats are on the same page as voters because they're moving ahead with all these rumblings of hearings and impeachment. Could there be a downside for Democrats?
Well, I think the one thing that we look at here is the movement among unaffiliated voters. Because as I was just saying, I mean, if Trump came out today and said, I'm going to give everybody in America $25,000 tax-free, 80% of Democrats would oppose it. But when you see movement, when you see, for example, that only 21% of unaffiliated voters said, yes, the Democrats should investigate. So the unaffiliated voters are almost there with the Republicans, and those are the voters that you really look for to move. I mean, you know Republicans are going to vote for Trump. They like the job he's doing. You know Democrats are going to vote against Trump. But the unaffiliated voters, the voters in the middle, are the ones that decide elections, and they are obviously saying no more of this.
How big is that middle these days?
You know, I don't know that we have an exact figure on it. I mean, generally it's said it's 10, 12, 14%. And the makeup of it is interesting. I mean, I think we have found that, for example, in the Trump years, that Democrats who were unhappy with kind of the Hillary Clinton direction of the party were, after that election, were moving away from calling themselves Democrats, just like a lot of Republicans moved away from calling themselves Republicans with some of the candidates that they had to deal with in recent years.
So it's kind of a hodgepodge in the middle, but it seems to be...
Exactly. And the makeup of it shifts. I mean, it ranges from the folks that say a plague on both your houses who vote for the third-party guy no matter what, to disaffected Republicans and Democrats.
I'll have to say, Fran, I was a bit surprised by these numbers when I saw your... survey that came out, because I would have thought that the Democratic leaning voters would have been more supportive of the Democrats just, you know, continuing this political show, but it appears that they would rather them move on to handle substantive issues, knowing that, you know, for 2 years the special counsel's been out there and hasn't been able to find anything.
Well, I think also, Tony, part of it is a lot of these Democrats have the fantasy that, or what appears to be the fantasy, that Mueller's going to come back and find collusion. I mean, obviously, every indication we've seen is that there's no evidence there that he's going to come back, as you were saying earlier in your program, that he's going to come back and say, no, there's nothing there. And yet, Democrats overwhelmingly, 75% of Democrats believe there was collusion between the Trump campaign and the Russians. So 75% of Democrats are already convinced that this happened. And so, you know, there may be a sizable segment of those folks that just figure, hey, we're not going to need these committee things because we're just going to be moving to impeachment as soon as Mueller comes out with his report.
Yeah, I think you take your, some of the early reports, you know, and a lot of it's based on rumor, but you've had congressional hearings on this that have come up empty-handed. And then when you start seeing the congressional Democrats moving on to these hearings, it would suggest to you that they know there's not going to be anything in this report of substance. So I don't know. I think we're going to have to be in for a long period of more of these hearings because I don't think they're on the same page with many of the voters.
Now, well, it's going to be fascinating, and we're trying to get at that with polls. It's going to be fascinating to see kind of what the makeup is of the Democratic Party these days, because we know we've got this progressive wing mm-hmm. that's producing, which is pushing the Pelosi crowd in directions they don't want to go. And, you know, where do Democrats really want their party to go?
Well, that's, Fran, that's an interesting question, because that could grow the middle, that unaffiliated voter, that segment could grow if people feel that they just don't fit in the Democratic Party anymore.
Right. And include, a lot of Democrats who just want to move on.
Yeah.
Get things done.
Fran Coombs, thank you so much. As always, great to talk with you. Thanks for stopping by today.
Always a pleasure, Tony.
All right. Fran Coombs, managing editor for Rasmussen Reports. I always like to look at those numbers. Okay, when we come back, I've got a poll survey question for you today. And then we're going to be talking with Travis Weber about the implications of Syria and religious freedom in the Middle East. That's next. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
I'm Tony Perkins, and you are listening to Washington Watch, the website, tonyperkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And let me encourage you, if you've not yet joined the End Birthday Abortion campaign, you can do so. We're sending a message that Nancy Pelosi will have to see. She'll have to look at it. 90,000 newborn baby hats. To be a part of it, go to tonyperkins.com and find out more. All right, I'm going to let you participate in the same poll question that Rasmussen Reports did with about 1,000 voters across the country. I want to see where kind of you line up with the general population. Now, here's the question they asked voters. It was, if the Mueller probe fails to find proof that the Trump campaign colluded with the Russian government, should congressional Democrats do their own investigation, or should they move on to other issues? What do you say? Investigate, move on, or don't know? Here's how you can answer. Go to text and text Perkins to 51555. That's 51 3 5s, 51 3 5s. 51555. Just put Perkins in the text there, and it you'll get a text back with a link to the survey, and fill it out. Again, appreciate all those who participated yesterday, and let me quickly go through those numbers again. It was based on the Barna study of spiritually vibrant families. Would you say your family is spiritually vibrant? 40.5% said yes. 48.5% said working on it. And 9.5 said no. Well, keep working on it. Keep working on it. All right, that number again, the text, 51555. Put Perkins in the text, and you'll get a link back. Okay, some good news out of Colorado. I mentioned this top of the program. Colorado Civil Rights Commission, you'll recall, went after Colorado baker Jack Phillips. He's a Christian baker, Masterpiece Cakes. Went all the way to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court overwhelmingly sided with Jack. And, but, I should say, not everybody got the message. The Colorado Civil Rights Commission went after him again because someone came in trying to set him up just like they did the first time. to bake a cake for a gender transition celebration. Well, they came after him again, started filing charges against him, harassing him. But he filed suit against the state, against the commission. And so they put up a white flag. And now he's been completely exonerated. Join me now to talk about this, as well as about Syria and the continued military presence there and what that means for religious freedom internationally, is our own Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy at the Family Research Council. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks, Tony.
Let's start with domestic religious freedom and this case with Jack Phillips. How significant is this?
This is quite significant. You know, for the case's own sake, it's significant. It's obviously good to see Jack get a win here. You know, anyone who's tracked this case throughout, as you know, we've followed it and followed our allies at Alliance Defending Freedom as they defended Jack in court. But anyone who's followed this case understands that what Jack sought to do was simply live out his faith in peace. He didn't seek this fight. The fight came to his doorstep. The question for him was, how was he going to respond? And he stood on his convictions firmly, but with love and grace. And this is something that, you know, more and more Americans, I think, need to understand, that the fight on these issues for the freedom to live out our faith is eventually going to come to our doorstep. So the case is a signpost for many of us in a number of ways. And it's obviously good to see Jack get a win here. And hopefully he'll be left in peace now just to run his business, live out his faith in the marketplace as he's just sought to do throughout the entire ordeal that he's been through.
Now, Travis, the federal government in the previous case filed a brief on his behalf. We have an administration that clearly has been out front in terms of defending religious liberty, not just the freedom of worship, but the freedom of religion. Might this whole thing have gone a different direction if we did not have an administration that was very vocal on behalf of religious freedom?
It certainly could have, you know, and you look at this, it's very significant that the DOJ filed a brief in Jack's case on his side. It's very significant that the Trump administration is nominating judges that understand the Constitution from an originalist framework, understand the importance of interpreting the plain text of statutes and not reading their policy preferences into law. So there are a number of ways in which the Trump administration is involved in these cases that many people care about. You know, and I was reading a piece recently by writer David French, and he points out, he notes the success of Jack's case here, the good result. And he notes the hostility of the commission. Even after the Supreme Court's ruling, commissioners' evidence had come out in which commissioners had been making hostile, animus-filled statements against Jack, the very type which the Supreme Court based its ruling on for Jack in the first place. And, you know, in French's piece, he notes that this is the type of mentality, intolerant mentality, opposing people just trying to live out their faith. And it's very significant because we know the Trump administration is defending religious freedom, defending people trying to live out their faith in peace. What is the alternative? What would it be like if we had an administration exhibiting the mentality these commissioners exhibited? That's the question people really need to ask themselves. Really need to envision a world in which the levers of government are filled with this intolerance. It's very significant because it's going to affect the freedom of many, many people in the coming years.
Well, you mentioned David French. I read that piece as well, and I think he closed his piece with this, and I quote from it, "I'm not optimistic there will be more cases like this, at least until the courts decisively teach the radical cultural left that its bigotry may not attain the force of law." And that's not going to just happen. I mean, that is going to require engagement and intentionality, meaning that Christians, those who care about religious freedom, are going to have to be engaged in elections so that we elect people who are intentional about bringing the courts back within the boundaries of the Constitution.
Exactly. And not only the courts, but nominees and administration filled with people who understand religious freedom, are willing to fight for freedom of religion, free speech, and protect a pluralistic society in which that we've had, not depart radically left towards some socialist police state in which the government is the moral enforcer. The government enforces everyone into conformity with its own moral vision. And I think, you know, French's piece, I think he sees that it's the influence that elections have on the type of people that are in positions of power to affect the freedom of our society. And of course, we would say long term, we need cultural renewal too. We need to influence the country as Christians, be involved, be praying, be conversing with our neighbors. But that includes paying attention to the ability and the power we have as citizens in a free society to responsibly say, who do we want in a position of authority, implementing that Romans 13 governing power that the Bible tells us the government is put in place by God to enforce. Very significant, very weighty questions. We shouldn't approach them lightly. We should say, how should we act in this position of great responsibility that we've been given?
I think it's important to connect the two, that as you say, you know, we have to have cultural renewal. We need to have spiritual renewal. We need a revival. We need a spiritual revival in America to really transform the hearts and minds. That's the only way that we see America really turning. But the policies are important, because if you can't live out your faith, if it's more challenging to be able to share your faith, then that makes that renewal even more difficult to achieve. Not saying that you can't do it without it, but it makes it more difficult. And so I think Christians need to understand, yes, we have to evangelize, but the policies that government put in place determine whether or not it's easy to evangelize or more challenging to evangelize.
Yeah, and I think it's very true, Tony. And I think, you know, for many of us who've only lived under freedom in the United States, it's difficult to really envision what it's like trying to live out one's faith in China, the Middle East, North Korea, of all places. I mean, some of us have been to those areas of the world, but for many of us, we've only had a society in which we are relatively free to still share our faith. We need to take advantage of that freedom. But I think we sometimes, it perhaps could lead us to take it too lightly, because we've never really lived under the type of true oppression that so many fellow Christians and others around the world face because of their faith. And this is should give us pause as we think about this. As you said, we need cultural renewal too. We've just yesterday, the other day, I did a blog on this piece in which Arthur Brooks talks about the need to civilly engage and disagree. And there's the need for that. But at the same time, you can't neglect the approach and the outlook on freedom and society that the government that we elect has. And we have a choice. We can say we want this type of government that's going to protect freedom, or we're okay with a government. We're cavalier about a government that's going to come in and start suppressing freedom for everyone and suppressing and controlling how we live out our faith.
Well, you mentioned some of these totalitarian repressive regimes, and I want to get to the Middle East here in just a moment. But I want to make one final point on this issue of domestic religious freedom and the victory that we saw with Jack Phillips in Colorado against the Civil Rights Commission. That would have not only did we have to have, you know, an administration that was, you know, going to bat for him and judges in the right place and all of that, but you had to have somebody willing to have the courage to stand up. And that was Jack Phillips. Because so many individuals, when they are attacked or challenged, they capitulate. They don't want to fight. They don't want the conflict. And I get that. We're not called to conflict, but we are called to be conformed to the image of Christ, and that sometimes brings conflict. But we a lot of credit is due Jack Phillips for standing up.
Absolutely, it starts with the desire and the will of someone to say, "I'm going to stand firmly for what I believe in," and that's this conviction should be applauded.
And we need to see that in others. I mean, you may not have a business, may not be a baker, but you still need to display courage to stand for the truth. I mean, again, not in a hostile way, but not shrinking back when you know something is wrong. You don't have to be silent about it. You can politely say, you know what, that's just not true, and speak truth. I mean, that's what the world needs more than anything. It is the truth that sets people free. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkis. Travis Weber with me in this final segment. He's the Vice President of Policy at the Family Research Council. Let me put out that text to you one more time before we move on to Syria. And this is to allow you to participate in the poll question. If the Mueller probe fails to find proof that the Trump campaign colluded with Russia, the Russian government, should congressional Democrats do their own investigation or should they move on to other issues? 51555. Text 5135. That's 51555. Text Perkins. You'll get a link back to take that survey. All right, Travis, earlier we had General Boykin on talking about the president's announcement that at least 200 troops will remain in northeast Syria as a part of a coalition of forces from France and from Great Britain. This big relief to that government in the northeast portion of Syria, about a third of the country geographically, this is important for religious freedom because they're outside of Israel, the only place that in their social charter compact that they have written, they recognize religious freedom from a Western standpoint, meaning that the ability to worship God, not worship God, change one's religion, it truly is a religious freedom, not simply a freedom of worship understanding.
Very true, Tony. You know, and I think the untold story in this whole episode is the nature of the government and the society they're trying to cultivate in this autonomous area in northeast Syria. You know, a lot of the story when it arises, it's on weapon sales and the surrounding conflict and the like. But really, the miracle here is that you have the beginnings of a society in which you have true religious freedom. And most significantly here, the freedom of Muslims to convert to Christianity or other faiths and live their lives peacefully after converting. This is very, very, very significant for the Middle East, as we know, in Muslim background areas. And it's consistent with an idea of religious freedom that we understand. Everyone can have the freedom to choose how they're going to worship and live out that faith. Very significant that here you have people trying to create this in the Middle East, in this part of Syria. And we shouldn't overlook this. We should do what we can to protect it, to cultivate it. And there are a lot of things that are going on right now in that area that are affecting this. It's very significant that we have those troops there who will prevent the rise of ISIS, be a deterrent against Iran, and be a deterrent against Turkey. If it tries to cross the border, Turkey's going to think twice and more than that before attacking U.S. troops.
Yeah, I think this is a big deal, a very big deal when it comes to religious freedom, because outside of Israel, nothing like this exists. And I think that, you know, Travis, as we've talked about before, all of the studies that show the economic prosperity that comes, the social stability that follows when you have true religious freedom, it's going to be a bright, shining example, I believe, in the Middle East if it is allowed to take root. And I think this military presence will provide enough of the protection to see it take root.
Yeah, we need to make sure that they have the security there to protect the freedom, the experiment of freedom that has started to take root there. We need to make sure they're secure from people that want to do their harm, the Turks, the Iranians, and others. And because they're doing this, they want freedom, and we should support that effort.
Travis Weber, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, to find out more about the Family Research Council, you can go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Be sure and participate in our End Birthday Abortion campaign. You can find out all about it at TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.